Thanks. Yeah, I'm Dave Bly. This is joint work with John Lafferty, not on my own. And I'm going to discuss modeling science. Can't really tell, but science here is italicized. So I'm discussing the journal science as opposed to all of science. Okay. So what I'm going to talk about today is modeling the journal science. And what we have is the journal science from 1880 to 2002, courtesy of JSTOR. So for those of you that might not have experienced JSTOR, JSTOR is an online archive that takes original bound volumes, scans them, performs optical character recognition on the scans, and then posts the original scans for people to perform keyword search on the OCR text. Okay, so this is a very valuable resource to scientists everywhere. Nowadays, searching large archives of electronic texts have become a part of our daily lives, and results in huge collections. So just the journal Science is about 130,000 documents comprising 76 million words. Now, what I'm going to talk about today is how to take this collection of documents and how to automatically discover the hidden thematic structure that's inside it using hierarchical topic models. And then we want to use this structure for things like browsing, search, assessing the similarity between documents, and so on. And this is basically part of this problem, which is that as more and more documents get digitized and placed online, and we have access to everything all the time, all at once, we need ways to place organization on this mess so that we can use it effectively. And I'm going to talk about using topic models for this purpose. So, as some examples, with this guy, topic models can automatically discover the kind of words in thematic groups, kind of like in the talk earlier today, from the document. So here we see four topics. These are probability distributions over words, and these are the words in order of their probability: human, genome, DNA, genetic, genes, evolution, evolutionary, and so on. We can also use topic models to automatically annotate unlabeled images, although I won't be talking about that today. We can model the evolution of topics through time, so discover not only how words go together and what themes there are in the document collection, but also how word use changes over time. Science, of course, spans 120 years, our collection. And also model connections between documents, so between topics. So here are some topics we discovered in science, and here we have a model that discovers connections between those documents. So kind of placing a graph structure on it, between those topics, sorry. So in this talk, I want to start by talking about the simplest kind of topic model, or one of the simplest kind of topic models, called latent Dirichlet allocation. And then I'm going to go on and discuss the dynamic extension and correlated topic models, where we discover connections between topics. Okay, so latent Dirichlet allocation, or LDA, and I know that collides with linear discriminant analysis, but when I say LDA in the next hour, it means latent Dirichlet allocation. LDA is a probabilistic model. In a probabilistic model, we treat our data as observations that arose from some generative process that includes hidden variables, the hidden structure that we want to assume lives in our data. And for example, for documents, that hidden structure is the underlying thematic content of the collection. And then we want to infer what that hidden structure is given a set of observations. So, of course, we don't know what that thematic content is, but we have our 130,000 articles. We want to infer it from them. Then, with a probabilistic model, we, of course, want to situate new data into that model. So once I have a model of science, I want to take the next science article that I observe and ask, how does that fit in with the rest of these 130,000 articles? Or I want to take a query, say you type a query into a query box and say, how does this relate to these 130,000 articles? Which ones are relevant to that query? Okay, so situating new data into the estimated model is an important part of the kind of probabilistic modeling story. Okay, so the intuition behind LDA, or latent Dirichlet allocation, is that documents exhibit multiple topics. Okay, so here's an example document from our collection. This is called Seeking Life's Bare Genetic Necessities. And here we are, Seeking Life's Bare Genetic Necessities. And what I've done by hand here is I've marked up the different words in this article in different colors. So you can see words like gene, genomes, genes, sequenced are yellow, words about genetics, words like computational numbers, computer predictions are blue, words about numerical analysis or statistics. biological analysis, and words like life, organism, survive, words about evolutionary biology, are pink. And so the intuition that I'm trying to illustrate here is that in our whole collection of documents, there are some themes that run through it, and each document exhibits a combination of those themes. And that's kind of the first step in this hidden variable modeling setup, is to dream up some hidden structure that you think is in your data that you want to get out of your data. Okay, the next thing to do is to then cast these intuitions into a generative probabilistic process. So in this case, we're going to model that each document is a random mixture of corpus-wide topics, and that each word is drawn from one of those topics. So what do I mean by that? We're going to imagine that there are, say, 50 or 100 distributions over words that reflect the different themes in science, the different topics, words about genomics, words about evolutionary biology, words about numerical analysis. And we're going to posit that each document is generated as follows. First, we're going to choose a distribution over those, say, 50 topics. Okay, so this is just this little cartoon histogram. These are the numbers from 1 to 50, and I've decided that this document exhibits the red topic with this probability, the yellow topic with this probability, and the blue topic with this probability. Okay? Then, for each word in the document, I'm going to choose a topic from this distribution over topics. Choose a topic assignment from this distribution over topics. So here I chose the red topic. Look up what the distribution over words is that corresponds to that red topic, and draw the word randomly from that distribution. So here I get organism. Sometimes I'm going to choose the yellow topic and get the word genetic. Sometimes I'm going to choose the blue topic and get the word predictions. So this is a probabilistic process that we are imagining generated all of science. And in reality, of course, though, we don't get to observe any of this stuff, right? We don't know what topic the author drew computer analysis from. And our goal is to infer this underlying topic structure, the 50 topic distributions that permeate the entire collection, as well as how the documents are divided in this mixed membership kind of way according to those topics from just our observations, which are the words themselves. Yeah?
I have a quick question. I'm not sure whether I understand what you call topic correctly. It seems like from the words you are showing, it looks like it's concepts, like something that I would put in the same thesaurus entry rather than a real topical thing. Right? There are words like computation, computer, things that have to do with computing, and I would put in another computer thesaurus entry. But there are many things you can do with computers, and each one of them, right? You can do natural language processing.
Right. I'm really just sort of describing the hidden variable model here. We don't know yet what the topics we're going to infer are going to look like at this point, but I'm imagining that, yeah, words about computation might be a topic. Words about genetics might be a topic.
Maybe I should go for example, I'm thinking about latent semantics analysis, mm-hmm. Right? So they collapse various words and they call it a concept. And
that's
I'm wondering,
right.
Does this map to what you are calling a topic or what it is?
Yes, in LSI, that's what this maps to, the sort of weights on the entire vocabulary of the topic. So we have topic proportions here, we have topic assignments here, we have words here, and then we have 50 distributions over this vocabulary, which are what I call the topics. Those players are going to come back.
Can that word only belong to one topic?
No, each topic is a distribution over the whole vocabulary. So that's a good question. A word like analysis might have high probability of two topics.
Sure.
Or five. Yeah. Okay, so actually, before we go on, right, I've described an imaginary process, and our goal is to reverse that process. Given our documents, infer all of this structure that we're now discussing. Yeah?
Do you do anything to deal with the disambiguation between computer analysis and statistical analysis?
No, the hope is that if a word is used in two different contexts, that will come out of the posterior analysis of this model. Yeah.
Are all the topics wrong?
No, thank you. Like I said, the only thing we have are words organized into documents. We have nothing else. That's all that JSTOR has. And we think that if we had all this information, we could use it to browse and explore that collection, but the goal is to discover everything. Okay. So how are we gonna do that? So first thing is to cast now that probabilistic model as a formal graphical model. And just to quickly review, a graphical model is a directed graphic, well, this is a directed graphical model, where nodes represent random variables, edges denote a possible dependence between random variables, observed variables are shaded, and plates denote replicated structures. So here I have a hidden variable that is, which n observed variables are dependent on it, and I can shorthand that by drawing an arrow from y to xn and drawing a plate around it, okay? Now a graphical model, the structure of this graph, defines a pattern of conditional independencies between the ensemble of random variables represented by the nodes. So, for example, this graph corresponds to this joint distribution, the probability of y times conditionally independent, the probability of each x given y. Okay, so this and this are basically the same thing. This is a representation of this factor joint distribution over these n plus 1 random variables. Okay, so with that set up, this is the generative process that I just described for you. All right, I'm going to sort of talk it out as though we were looking at that picture. First, our only observed variables are the nth word in the dth document. Okay, this again goes back to your question. This is the only observation in this whole setup. Now, the generative process of our document collection works like this. First, we're going to choose k topics. So each of these beta k is a topic. This is a distribution over our vocabulary. So the first thing we're going to do is randomly choose these k distributions over our vocabulary. Then, for each document, that's this d plate, we're going to first choose the topic proportions theta. Okay, this is another hidden random variable. This is that cartoon histogram that says it's partly about genomics, partly about computer analysis, partly about evolutionary biology. And then, for each word, that's this n plate within the d plate, for each word within the document, I'm going to choose a topic assignment, a number from 1 to k, from that distribution theta that we just chose, and then choose the word from the corresponding distribution over terms. Okay? So this picture is a joint distribution over a collection of hidden variables and observed variables that represent that generative process we just discussed. Here it is. Here's that generative process. I guess I just said it. But of course, again, the goal is from a collection of documents, from these observed words, I want to infer all of these unshaded nodes. I want to know what is the topic assignment for this word, what are the topic proportions from this document, and possibly most interesting, what are the K distributions over words that combine to form this collection. And then we use our posterior expectations of these variables to perform whatever task it is at hand. For example, information retrieval, building a browser of documents, finding document similarities, etc. Now, computing that posterior distribution, the conditional distribution of these unshaded nodes given the shaded nodes, is intractable, but there are a number of approximation techniques. Yeah?
What's the node on the far right, visual theta?
So alpha and eta are parameters to the distributions of these hidden random variables. So this is a Bayesian model in the sense that we have distributions over everything, but every Bayesian model has a moment of truth where you have to decide something, and these are the things we're deciding. But you can also fit them in an empirical Bayes way. That's typically what I do.
Just so I understand, so
yeah.
Assuming that you have this mixture of topics, and let's say it's two-thirds physics and one-third math.
Yeah.
So what's going to happen to generate this document is you're going to roll a lopsided dice, decide if it's physics or math, then roll another lopsided dice and spew out one word.
Yep.
Then you're going to go back and roll the dice again.
Yep.
How do you decide how many times you roll the dice?
That's a good question. We're implicitly conditioning on that information. So we're not really going to use this model to generate articles. We tried.
No.
None of them got accepted.
Tropic humanities.
Yeah. That reminds me. Yeah, I can't tell that joke. So we're implicitly assuming, since we're always going to be conditioning on observed data, part of that observed data is the number of words.
Okay.
But there are models that try to model that as well. Yeah.
So could you explain, I think it was the previous slide, where the Dirichlet and multinomial.
Sorry, I guess I didn't describe what the distributions are. So The distribution over topic proportions is a Dirichlet, and the distribution over topics is a Dirichlet too. So this is a Dirichlet of V minus one dimensions, a Dirichlet of K minus one dimensions. And then the words come from a multinomial or a discrete distribution with parameter, whatever the topic is.
So you have some justification of why Dirichlet and why multinomial?
Yes, the justification is that it facilitates computation with this complicated model.
But it works well for...
And it seems to work well.
Well for documents.
But we'll see later that we're going to want to relax this assumption that this is Dirichlet, because that's making an implicit assumption that the topics occur independently in the correlated topic model. We'll see that. I mean, it's as in any kind of modeling setup, the model doesn't really reflect reality, but our hope is that it's going to help us do the thing we're trying to do. Yeah?
Is the number of topics given to you, or do you just pick that
up? Good question. So another implicit assumption here is that the number of topics is fixed, and that can be relaxed. So one can either look at predictive performance across multiple numbers of topics to choose a good number of topics, or the more complicated, what are called non-parametric Bayesian models, based on Dirichlet processes that let you choose the number of topics automatically, build it into the model. But I'm not going to talk about that today.
Chinese restaurant.
Yeah, the Chinese restaurant process. Okay. This is intractable. Many techniques for finding this posterior distribution, for approximating this posterior distribution. I've kind of put these in, so there's debate about this. I put these in what I think of as the order in terms of fastest and somehow least accurate first to slowest and most accurate. And I guess this is very new and very exciting, but still unknown how fast or accurate it is relative to these other ones. For modeling science, we have a huge collection. We use mean field variational methods. And at the end of the talk, if you're interested, I have some technical slides about how those work. But right now, I'm just going to kind of show some analysis.
So how do you start from, you start from initial guess for the different K distributions, or what?
Yeah, so how do we get these distributions out? Using one of these four algorithms. And the mean field variational method, indeed, you start out with some random guess as to what the topics are, and it's an iterative optimization problem where you're going uphill in an objective function that basically finds an approximate posterior that's close to the truth that you care about. Again, at the end, I can give some technical details about that.
Do you anywhere assume sparsity, in other words, each topic?
Good question. The prior on the topic distributions, in the Dirichlet, if you fix the parameters to be very small, very close to zero, then that implicitly assumes sparsity. So if you draw from such a Dirichlet, you'll just get a few spikes in the histogram. But you can control sparsity, therefore, with eta.
And so then do you try and learn that parameter, or do you just give it your...
You know, you can think of it in multiple ways. If you're a practitioner and you know how sparse you want it, you know you want it sparse, eta equals 0.005, then fix it. If you want to fit it with empirical Bayes, then you can fit it using EM. Okay. So, just to continue, so for this first LDA model, I'm going to analyze science for 10 years, from 1990 to 2000. This is 17,000 documents, 11 million words, and we use a vocabulary of 20,000 terms. We fit a 100 topic LDA model to this collection. And here's that same article that I showed you in the beginning. And here's the posterior expectation of its topic proportions. So that cartoon histogram that I drew for you before, this is the real histogram. Here's 100 topics. And you can see that only a handful of these topics have been activated in the posterior. Right? Conditioned on these words, I think that this document is about this handful of topics. Moreover, we can then take the top few of these and look at the words with the highest probability in those topics. And you can see, this is what I showed you before, that the top four topics have words about genetics, words about evolutionary biology, words about, words about diseases, and words about computer modeling. Okay, and that's consistent with what we think that article is about. So this is kind of the simplest first model, and my point here is that LDA is a powerful model for both visualizing the hidden thematic structure in large corpora and generalizing new data to fit into that structure. I didn't show you the results here, but you can compare LDA to, say, a simple mixture model or other kinds of models, and it has better predictive performance. In statistics, this kind of model where data exhibit multiple components to different degrees is called a mixed membership model. And LDA builds on the work of LSI that Hagit mentioned and Thomas Hoffman's probabilistic LSI. Okay. So two kind of advantages to working with this hidden variable model, probabilistic graphical model setup. One is that they're modular. So this model, you'll see in the next part of the talk, can be embedded in a much more complicated model, and the same reasoning can be used. And two, they're general in the sense that the data generating distribution can be changed. So we're assuming a multinomial distribution of words given topic, but you can use LDA to model images if you assume a Gaussian distribution on image features, for example, or model genomic data, et cetera. Variational inference is fast and allows us to analyze large data sets, and there's code to play with this model that's available on my website, C-Code. Okay, yeah.
So how fast is this, for example, on this
data set? So like this 10 years of science, 17,000 articles, this took on the order of 4 to 5 hours to analyze.
And there are OCR errors, right?
And there are OCR errors, but they're nominal. Their success rate is something like 98 or 99 point something percent. It's pretty impressive. Because the type is so regular. but with OCR data, for example, you can't rely on syntactic structure the way natural language processing methods rely. Because there may be many more punctuation errors, or if something's in two columns, for example. Really, the kind of exchangeable word representation that we're assuming here is all you've got.
So you just do tokenization on the OCR output?
Exactly, yeah. They give us the OCR output. We choose our vocabulary by looking at TF-IDF scores for each word. We choose the top 20,000 words, and then we model the data that way.
Take out the words from the captions and from the diagrams as well, or just the running text?
I think it does. It does pick out the captions. I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure it does. Because they really just slap it on the scanner and then send it to the server. Yeah.
Did you do any lemmatization, turning dogs into dog?
Nope. Okay. Nope. Let's see. I mean, you can see evolution, evolutionary, and so on. Computers. Yeah. I mean, the idea is to really have something where you take your electronic documents and you get something out that's useful, and not have to do a lot in between. We've done lemmatization before with this, but it was so aggressive that it kind of took out a lot of the content of the tokens.
Well, there's a difference between lemmatization, stemming.
You're right.
Too aggressive. Yeah.
Right.
Lemmatization is just a functional morphology.
Yep. Yeah, you're right. I forgot that distinction. Lemmatization would be a good thing to do here because you would reduce the dimension of your words. Okay. So this is the first kind of model I want to talk about. And I want to dig in a little bit to the exchangeability assumptions that this model makes. So in particular, LDA assumes first that words are exchangeable. So if I reorder the words, the underlying probability of the words given a model is going to be the same. This doesn't make any sense from a linguistic perspective, but you can imagine that if you jumbled the words of an article, you wouldn't really be able to understand what the article was saying specifically, but you would know what the article was about. You could say this is an article about statistics and neuroscience. But moreover, LDA assumes that the documents are exchangeable. So the documents, no matter what order they appear in, will give the same probability mass under a specific LDA model. And this, or in other words, their joint probability is invariant to permutation. And this is a very restrictive assumption when we're modeling science. So the reason is that documents about the same topic in science are not exchangeable. Science, remember, spans 1880 to 2002. That's our collection. And here I have an article called Instantaneous Photography from 1890. And it's about what you think it would be about. And here I have an article about, called Infrared Reflectance in Leaf-Sitting Neotropical Frogs. Okay, now, both of these articles are about photography, but this one's from 1977. But the kind of jargon and vocabulary of photography in 1890 was very different from the vocabulary of photography in 1977. So it's very restricted then to model these as being exchangeable. You don't want to think of this article having come after this article.
You also got the problem that the same words are being used to refer to different things over time. Because the first use, for example, of airplane referred to what we would call now a dirigible or airship.
Right.
Not
right.
Something with a motor.
Right.
It wasn't until after, you know, so that was in the 1880s, 1890s, and then afterwards it referred to Wright brothers, so it referred to airplane. We think of it as airplane. So in the terms they appear, but they are not referring to the same thing.
Right. That's
so they would be parts of different distributions.
Yes, that's exactly right. In particular, right, this whole model is about the use of language. And the use of language in 1890 is different than the use of language in 1977. But it's not independent, right? They're connected. Somehow the photography vocabulary from here evolved into the photography category here. And so the point is that we want to model topics as evolving over time. So the idea was to build a dynamic topic model, where we divide the corpus into sequential slices. For example, we divide science up by year. We assume that each slice's documents are exchangeable, drawn from an LDA model. And then we allow the topic distributions over terms to evolve from slice to slice. Okay, so here's the graphical model. And as a sort of a higher level point, you can see that we've used LDA as a substructure in this larger model. So the way this model works is that I have my K topics in 1880. Here they are, called beta K1. And they generate all the documents of 1880. Then, in the generative process, these topics are perturbed a little bit, according to some linear process that we assume here, and we get our K topics in 1881, and then we generate all the documents of 1881. And this continues up until the present, or until 2001, which is when our corpus ends. So the same topics in 1880 slowly evolve over time to be the whatever topics they are in 2002, 2001. Okay, so the technicality here is that we were assuming a Dirichlet distribution over the topics. And it's not clear how to build a linear system out of a Dirichlet distribution so that it changes over time. Yeah, did you have a question?
My question was the statement that you made in the previous slide related to topics. So it seems like, you know, what a topic itself is a question that could be asked, because, you know, when does a new topic emerge as opposed to having only
other
topics? And related to the other question in terms of aircrafts, I could consider only aircrafts as I see them now as being my topic, as opposed to having originated from a dirigible or a quadrangle or whatever.
I mean, again, I'm going to appeal to this point that no model is going to correctly describe how our corpus came to be. But what we're after is a useful tool to organize, explain, predict the data that we have. But yes, that it would be interesting perhaps to build that into the model. But we'll talk about that at the end. Let me get through this model first. So the technicality, of course, is that a Dirichlet distribution, it's not clear how to make this evolve through time. So what we did was use something called the logistic normal distribution, which is basically draw a multivariate Gaussian random variable and then put it through the logistic, the softmax function to map it to a point on the simplex, exponentiate it, and renormalize it. And since this distribution is described in terms of Gaussian random variables, we can chain it together the way you would chain the hidden state in a Kalman filter or any kind of linear dynamic system. So here we're chaining beta K1 to beta K2 to beta KT. These are all Gaussian variables. This is just the usual Gaussian chain. But then, to turn them into topics, we exponentiate them and renormalize them. Okay? And that's kind of described here. Here, beta tk given beta t minus 1k is a normal with independent, are v independent normals, whose mean are the topic distribution at the previous time point. And then, to get the probability of a word given that topic at that time point, we remap it to the simplex with this expression. Okay? And that gives us this big model. So it's more complicated, but our goals are the same. We want to compute the posterior distribution of the topics, the topic proportions for all the documents in all the years, and the topic assignments for all the words in all the documents in all the years, given the observations, which are the words. Again, exact inference is impossible, if only because it was impossible before, and that's a simpler model than this. And now, Monte Carlo Markov chain sampling is really not practical for the amount of data. We went from 17,000 articles to 130,000 articles, and moreover, we've lost conjugacy, which makes it harder. And so again, our solution is to do variational inference. Okay, so in a little more detail, although these aren't the technical slides at the end yet, what variational inference is we're after this posterior distribution, which is complicated. So what we do is we define a family of distributions, Q, on the same space, and then we find the member of that family that's closest in KL divergence to the distribution that we really care about. Okay, so we're turning our computation of a posterior distribution into an optimization problem. And you can see these excellent references. Jordan et al. 99 is a great introductory tutorial to variational methods, and Wainwright and Jordan is a more advanced and more detailed treatment of the subject. And I have more details at the end of the talk if you're interested. But the point is that while we can't compute that distribution, we can optimize this to some degree and get a local optimum, and then at least have an approximation to the posterior that we can place in our hands and use to do stuff. Okay. So now, instead of analyzing 10 years of science, we analyze the entire collection, 2002, not 2001. And again, there's no reliable punctuation, metadata, or references. We use 30,000 terms that occurred more than 10 times in the collection, and so now our data are 76 million observed words in 130,000 documents. So what do we get out of this? Well, we get the same kind of thing as before. So here's another article. This is called Sequencing the Genome Fast. And again, we can see that it's about a handful of the topics that we learned. And again, we can look at the most likely words from the top topics. And you see words like genome and sequencing, words about devices and materials, and words about data and information and computer processing. Okay.
That's a good example of a data person too of problems.
Ah, yes. That's right.
That's just number. So that's a good slide.
Yeah, this is a great slide. you're right.
Yeah.
So here we see data that occurs here and here. Now, because there are genomics articles that are just about data that aren't necessarily about using computers and genetics, and of course there's lots of articles about analyzing data with computers. Yeah, thanks.
What's your algorithm for detecting that?
Yeah.
Pretty massive.
I should remember that. Okay, but now we can do something more with this. So we can take this topic, which is about devices, and we can say, okay, look, this article is from like 2000. And so what does that mean? That means that it came from this distribution over words, which are, remember, the distribution over words, say it's topic number 32, in the year 2000. And we can ask, how did that distribution change over time in the past and in the future? I guess just in the past in this case. And so here I've just illustrated those top words. Here we see device, materials, current, and so on, in the year 2000. And I'm illustrating those top words from the model every 10 years, okay? The model has a distribution every year, that would be too much to show, so I'm illustrating them every 10 years. And so you can kind of watch as the devices type words change over time, starting with silicon and ending with steam. Or going from steam to silicon, really. Yeah?
How do you know which topic is which? How do you map?
It's easy. Because you don't need to do anything ad hoc to say, oh, what's it closest to, et cetera, et cetera. In the model, they're chained, right? That might be topic 35, and they're chained in the model. It's made explicit in our generative model that this topic turned into this topic, turned into this topic, turned into this topic. So if that was topic 32, all I do is look at the posterior inferences for topic 32 going all the way back to 1880, and that gets me... Oh, sorry, really? Okay. Back to that picture?
Back, yeah. So I was wondering if there's any particular reason you choose to do it in that unidirectional fashion rather than, say, starting with, say, sampling every 10 years and trying to...
It's a good question. So, so one question is, how do we decide to divide it up by year?
Yeah.
And that's certainly a limitation.
Why not have it overlapping rather than just 2 years?
Sure. We were doing the simplest first thing to take one of these models and make it a time series. But that's a limitation. So, for example, an article on December 31st, 1880 came from a different set of topics than January 1st, 1881. Right now we're working on continuous time topic models, which are kind of resolve that. Okay, but to just continue, so you can see that, and again, this is assuming nothing about the data in advance, that we've kind of captured this notion of devices from 1880 to 2000, even though they use totally different vocabularies. And this just emerges by analyzing the words of the documents. Okay.
How come the word two is one of the top? Look at the 1880
and 1890. 1880, the word two, yeah. I'm not sure. This is a statistical model, so what I would suspect is that this was used so much in that.
Cycle engine.
Yeah, or something like that. This was used so much either there or in other places that you need to account for it by giving it probability mass across a number of topics. But, you can kind of dig into the posterior and look at why that happened. Yeah.
So you did, you cut it off and said that they had to appear a certain number of, at least a certain number of times. Often when people do this model, they also say, I'm not going to look above a certain number because you just...
Right, well, we used TF-IDF again, so we actually took the union of the TF-IDF scores of the words that occurred more than 10 times, and so that kind of trims off the stop words. Okay.
Question? So isn't this model really biased? Because you can't know the exact inference in the first year. You decide upon some topics, and then you're doing
time
onward. Is it biased by that?
No, because we're not just analyzing it in a forward way. We're analyzing that whole chain all at once. So it's like when you're fitting an HMM, you're going backwards and forwards. Yeah, the variational inference procedure that takes that that turns computing that posterior into an optimization problem has to take into account all of the connections forward and backward. Okay, we can also take particular words in these topics and look at how those words use changed over time. So here in this topic, I'm calling this theoretical physics, it's topic 39 or whatever. You can look at the words relativity, you can look at the words laser, it kind of increases once lasers are invented, and you can look at the word force. Now this shows something nice that the model, that comes out of the model, but it also shows a serious limitation here, which is that these word distributions change a little bit at a time. And so even though relativity wasn't invented till somewhere like here, it kind of is gaining steam before anybody even thought of it yet. And so this is a modeling limitation when you're using these smooth Gaussian time series models. Something that I would like to think about is a model of word appearance and then a smooth model thereafter. How much it can jump, just to give you kind of more of a sense of the modeling issues you need to think about when you're doing this kind of work, the amount you can jump depends on the variance term that you give to the linear model. So if you give a very small variance, it can only change a little bit. Sure, the data might tell you that it's this high, but that prior variance is telling you that you can only change it a little bit at a time. But if you set that variance too big, then the word relativity might jump to another topic. This is the risk. Anyway, okay.
So have you compared this with the actual occurrence of the words in the document?
Yeah, so a good example of that, I don't have a picture of that, but here, look at this. So this is in the neuroscience topic. Again, this is like topic 23. And you see the word nerve losing steam as the word neuron increases in steam. And here the word oxygen peaks in the 50s or in the 60s. Now, oxygen has always been a prevalent word in science, but in neuroscience, it's not used as much past this time. Actually, I looked into this because I thought this was kind of interesting. I'll show you later how you can take these pretty pictures and use them to explore the corpus, which is kind of the point of this whole thing. But anyway, the reason that that oxygen had high probability here is that in the 50s and the 60s, they were doing these experiments where they would deprive people of oxygen for a long time and then ask them difficult questions and see how well they would do. And so, luckily for us, I mean, so my time of sort of doing these experiments for gift certificates and food and stuff was kind of like in the mid-90s. But luckily that ended at that point. So anyway, these are all nice pictures, but what can you really do with these estimates? The point is that we have this data. We think if we knew this thematic structure, we'd be able to do something useful with it to help people search and explore it. So how can we do that? Well, one way is to assess similarity between documents based on their underlying topic proportions. So what we considered was the expected Hellinger distance between the topic proportions of two documents. So here's the Hellinger distance between these thetas. The Hellinger distance, of course, is a distance measure between discrete distributions, or between any distributions, I guess. But since we don't know these topic proportions, we look at their expectation given the words of the document. So this is, if I have document A and document B, this is the expected Hellinger distance between their corresponding histograms over topics. Okay? And this basically is using the latent structure that we discovered to define similarity. Now, this is kind of a useful tool with these models anyway, but what's, I think, quite interesting in the time series version is that time has been implicitly factored out of this equation because the topics associated to the components of these two topic proportions vectors are different, right? If this is an article from 1950 and this is an article from 2002, then I'm using different distributions over words when I'm comparing component three. But because the model connects those distributions over words, we're hoping that they're somehow comparable anyway. So as an example, this is an article called The Brain of the Orang from 1880. All right, so this is one of our articles, and basically it's about a scientist who bopped an orangutan on the head and opened up that head and saw this brain and drew it and sent it to science. And it was published. And here is the latent topic proportions of this article, according to our model. Okay, this is from 1880, in the beginning of science. Now, if you look in the collection of which other articles are similar to this article, the article that's most similar among the 130,000 articles is this one, Representation of the Visual Field on the Medial Wall of the Occipital Parietal Cortex in the Owl Monkey, which you can kind of see from the article is basically about exactly the same thing, but of course in 1976. So the language of neuroscience has completely changed in the intervening 100 years, but the latent topic proportions are very similar. And so that's the advantage of using the dynamic topic model to assess similarity between documents. You factor out the notion that jargon has changed. Okay, so all this can be put together to do what I said we want to do, which is build a browser and facilitate organizing these kinds of vast collections of documents. So here you can see an article called Automatic Analysis, Theme Generation and Summarization of Machine-Readable Texts, which is kind of like about doing what we're doing here today. And you can take that article, you can look at which topics it was about, and you can look at the most similar articles to it, and you see we have, again, articles from 1990, articles from 1960, and articles from 1899. Okay, this article is kind of about how to organize electronic documents, and this article from 1990 shares some of the same authors. The article from 1960 is about how to encode authors and subjects on punch cards, which is presumably about the same thing, only in the 60s before there were modern fast computers. And the article from 1899, which is still in the top 10 among the 130,000, is about how to store pamphlets in your office. So again, there, scientists had exactly the same problem, only it was just pamphlets everywhere that in their office that they needed to figure out how to organize. So if you're using JSTOR, you can kind of take an article that you're interested in and then be directed to these other articles according to this posterior inference of this hierarchical model. Okay, as a quantitative comparison, you can look at how well this model predicts the words of the next year. Okay, so I'll just show the plot and explain. So what we're doing here is we're comparing that LDA model that I showed you in the beginning to the dynamic topic model, where what we do is we say we fit the LDA model to science up to the year 1920, and then we ask, what is the predictive probability of the words in 1920 according to that model? Okay, and this is the this is per word the negative log likelihood. So lower numbers are better. So LDA is right here. Okay, so this is the score for prediction of the words of 1920 given the words up to 1920. And here the dynamic topic model is down here. Okay, and we do this for every year. Okay, we don't need to cross-validate because we're looking at our data, then predicting the next step, then we're looking at that data, predicting the next step, and so on. And you can see that we have provided much better, this is the log scale, so a much better fit to the data in terms of prediction than the classical exchangeable model. Okay, so I should finish up soon. My point in showing you this model, this is another hierarchical model of sequential document collections. Exchangeability assumptions should be taken seriously because even though LDA gives you topics, when you're dealing with articles that are 100 years, that span 100 years, you can't assume exchangeability. Variational methods here are allowing very large-scale posterior inference, and examining the latent structure yields useful browsing tools. Now, some issues here are, again, the issue of choosing the number of topics. This is now even more complicated because, as you mentioned, topics appear and disappear, so you might want to use something like a birth-death process to model when topics come and go. And in variational inference, a general issue is, what are the hidden assumptions? So variational inference is a practical tool, works well, but issues like consistency and how good is the approximation to the posterior are still largely unknown. And a lot of theoretical work needs to be done in thinking about variational inference. Okay. So I guess in the last 5 minutes, I'll quickly tell you about a third way that we can relax the assumptions of that original LDA model. And again, it's using, and this is looking into the Dirichlet distribution. So the Dirichlet distribution is an exponential family distribution on the simplex, i.e. parameters to discrete distributions. But it implicitly assumes that the components are independent. Okay, so if you see a distribution, so in other words, the simplex is a multivariate, is a vector, and so this is a multivariate distribution, and the components of that vector are nearly independent. They're a little bit negatively correlated because it sums to one, but otherwise they can be assumed to be independent. Now, this doesn't make sense when you're analyzing documents because, for example, an article about fossil fuels is more likely to also be about geology than to be about genetics. And so we wanted to build a topic model that captured that these topics don't occur independently, which the Dirichlet assumes, given that first model that I showed you. So again, we appeal to the logistic normal, where we draw a multivariate Gaussian distribution and then map it to the simplex via exponentiation. Only now, we assume a full covariance matrix. So that means that in our logistic normal that chooses the topic proportions, there's a full covariance matrix between the topics, so we can capture through the parameters of that covariance matrix, which we fit, we can capture the connections between topics. Okay, so I won't, I can show you the picture. So the picture now is that instead of choosing from a Dirichlet here, we choose from a logistic normal. Now with the graphical model's lens, this looks like a trivial change to the model, but the conjugacy between the Dirichlet and the multinomial, between the Dirichlet and the multinomial, made this a very easy arc to handle, and now it's a more difficult arc to handle. In any event, we can approximate it as usual, and now, instead of just getting topics on their own, we get topics and we get connections between topics, according to the inverse covariance matrix of the logistic normal. So you can see here we have topics that are, as this is again with science for 20 years, and these are, the size of the font indicates how prevalent this topic was in the collection, in our inference, and then the connections indicate a strong value in the inverse covariance matrix. So you can see that words about policy are in a little cluster here, words about genetics are kind of over here, words about, somewhere there's words about neuroscience. Well, here's words about geology and kind of environmentalism, environmental science. I can't find the other side part.
Right there.
Oh yeah, brain memory, computer problem, yeah, and neurons up here. So anyway, again, this is a useful snapshot. If you have a huge electronic collection and you want a snapshot of what's in it, this is a great way to create that snapshot from just the words in the document and then use it to then go and look around in your collection.
What did you choose to display?
These are all the topics that we discovered.
Yeah, but then you could have garbled it in very ways.
I'm sure it's in, well, I plotted it and then I stayed up a long time. It's a very interesting problem. That's a very interesting problem.
You could use a spin model or something.
I think that's, I mean, I used this Prairie Hope Omnigraphle that I think has a, uses a spring model to lay it out initially, but then, Okay, so, and to summarize, topic models provide useful descriptive statistics for analyzing and understanding the latent structure of large document collections, and more generally, probabilistic graphical models are a useful way to express our assumptions about the hidden structure in the data and then turn the posterior inference crank in order to infer the hidden structure that lives in our data. I know I didn't talk much about them, but variational methods allow us to perform posterior inference. This shift from sampling to optimization allows us to handle these large data sets to give talks like this. And currently, open problems here are, one is choosing the number of topics, working on continuous time topic models that I mentioned, using topic models for prediction. So this is if your data has some external signal that you want to fit topics that they predict. Right now what we're doing is we're finding topics that are somehow that give the data high likelihood, essentially. But what if we had another variable that we wanted to predict from our documents and we wanted topics that are predictive of that variable? And then another question is inferring the impact of a document. So we all know that these science articles, for example, have citations and have impact as they're read through time. And you might imagine building a topic model that, as a hidden variable, has the impact of a document, and then inferring that impact by looking at the future documents and how their language reflects the language of the document you saw. Okay, and then I just like this quote from John Tukey that I put up at the end, which is about, well, you can read it, and